They set out through the dark woods. There was a moon somewhere beyond the ashen overcast, and they could just make out the trees. They staggered on like drunks.
"If they find us, they'll kill us, won't they, Papa?"
"Shh." No more talking.
"Won't they, Papa?"
"Shh." "Yes. Yes, they will." He'd no idea what direction they might have taken, and his fear was that they might circle and return to the house. He tried to remember if he knew anything about that, or if it were only a fable. In what direction did lost men veer? Perhaps it changed with hemispheres, handedness. Finally, he put it out of his mind, the notion that there could be anything to correct for. His mind was betraying him. Phantoms not heard from in 1,000 years, rousing slowly from their sleep. Correct for that. The boy was tottering on his feet. He asked to be carried, stumbling and slurring his words, and the man did carry him, and he fell asleep on his shoulder instantly, and he knew he couldn't carry him far. He woke in the dark of the woods in the leaves, shivering violently. He sat up and felt about for the boy. He held his hand to the thin ribs. Warmth and movement. Heartbeat. When he woke again, it was almost light enough to see. He threw back the blanket and stood and almost fell over again. He steadied himself and tried to see about him in the gray woods. How far had they come? He walked to the top of a rise and crouched and watched the day accrue. The charry dawn, the cold, elusive world. In the distant, what looked to be a pine wood, raw and black, a colorless world of wire and crepe. He went back and got the boy and made him sit up. His head kept slumping forward. "We have to go," he said. "We have to go." He carried him across the field, stopping to rest each 50 counted steps. When he got to the pines, he knelt and laid him in the gritty duff and covered him with the blankets and sat watching him. Starved, exhausted, sick with fear. He leaned and kissed him and got up and walked out to the edge of the woods, and then he walked the perimeter round to see if they were safe. Across the fields to the south, he could see the shape of a house and a barn. Beyond the trees, the curve of a road. A long drive with dead grass, dead ivy along a stone wall, and a mailbox and a fence along the road, and the dead trees beyond, cold and silent, shrouded in the carbon fog. He walked back and sat beside the boy. It was desperation that had led him to such carelessness, and he knew that he couldn't do that again, no matter what. The boy wouldn't wake for hours. Still, if he did, he'd be terrified. It had happened before. He thought about waking him, but he knew that he wouldn't remember anything if he did. He'd trained him to lie in the woods like a fawn. For how long? In the end, he took the pistol from his belt and laid it alongside him, under the blankets, and rose and set out. He came upon the barn from the hill above it, stopping to watch and to listen. He made his way down through the ruins of an old apple orchard, blackened, gnarly stumps, dead grass to his knees. He stood in the door of the barn and listened. Pale, slatted light. He walked along the dusty stalls. He stood in the center of the barn bay and listened, but there was nothing. He climbed the ladder to the loft, and he was so weak he wasn't sure he was going to make it to the top. He walked down to the end of the loft and looked out the high gable window at the country below. The pieced land, dead and gray, the fence, the road. There were bales of hay in the loft floor, and he squatted and sorted a handful of seeds from them and sat chewing, coarse and dry and dusty. They had to contain some nutrition. He rose and rolled 2 of the bales across the floor and let them fall into the bay below. Two dusty thumps. He went back to the gable and stood studying what he could see of the house beyond the corner of the barn. Then he climbed back down the ladder.